Down in Soho in the West End. Anyone been to Soho? Okay, we can talk about that later. And this summer marked my 10th anniversary of being the pastor of that church. I know I don't look old enough, I understand that, but and I was hoping that 10 years in the job would sort of rub off. You know, I'd start to look a bit holy or something, you know, a sort of holy glow. But a few weeks ago, I was in my usual cafe in Soho on Peter Street there. I was in the cafe. And I was sitting there and I was thinking, what should I have for lunch today? And there was a guy sitting next to me, and what he was having looked fantastic. So I said, excuse me, sorry, and what is that you've got there? He said, oh, that's a number 5. I said, is it good? He said, yes. I said, great. So I ordered a number 5, and it was very good. Sort of Greek special they're doing there. And I got chatting to this bloke just for a few minutes, and then I ate my lunch and left. It turned out that this man I'd been talking to was the cousin of the owner of the cafe. I know the owner of the cafe well. He's called Johnny, and we know each other well. And Johnny thought he'd try a test on his cousin. He said, you know that guy you were talking to, you know, about your lunch? What do you think he does for a job around here in Soho? What do you think he does for a job? Bear in mind, I've been a minister there now for 10 years, and he said, he's a pimp, isn't he? Yes, isn't he? And I was so encouraged. I'm going to move this forward. You've taken the spittoon away. You had this bucket there. Me and Will were saying, what is that? Is that a spittoon they have for their preachers? Not in Soho, yeah. Put this down. Now, I enjoyed the film. I thought the film was excellent. Well done to those that made it. And it told the story of the Good Samaritan. And even if you've never read that story from the Bible, the phrase Good Samaritan has entered the English language. And you probably would have heard the phrase. And you will know the Samaritans. You can phone up and ask for help or just someone to listen to you. And then that's where the name for that organization comes from. We had the story read to us from the Bible as well. And the story was simply this, that Jesus was having a conversation. And in the conversation, the question was asked, which is the most important commandments from God? What's the most important ones to do? And the answer came that the most important commandments from God, and we had it up on the screen earlier, was to love God with all of your heart, mind, soul, and strength. And the second commandment was to love your neighbor as yourself. Those were the most important things to do. That sums up what life is all about. To love God with all your heart, all your mind, and to love your neighbor as yourself. But someone wanted some more details on this, like these sort of discussions. And he said to Jesus, Jesus, who is my neighbor? Who is my neighbor? And then Jesus went on and told the story of the Good Samaritan that we had so well illustrated in the movie. What was with the lobster sandwich? Can anyone explain? Anyone know what the lobster sandwich was about? Deeply spiritually significant, I'm sure. This man is walking from Jerusalem to Jericho. It's about 23 miles. We checked out this morning, didn't we? 23 miles from Jerusalem to Jericho, which is about a day's walk. It's a good day's walk. It's uphill. One of the way. I can't remember which way. It's uphill, one of them. And so it might have been downhill. And it goes through some mountainous countryside, and it's got a sort of barren land. So it's a good place for robbers to pounce on someone. And this chap was attacked by robbers, beaten, and sort of left half dead on the side of the road with his possessions and money taken from him. And three people passed along the road. The first one, it says, was a priest. One of the Jewish priests from the temple passed by. He was too busy or didn't want to get involved, and he just walked past and left the man. A second man, a Levite, another person who would have worked in the temple, he walked past as well and didn't bother to stop. And a third man, a Samaritan, came along and he stopped. He helped the man. He cleaned his wounds. He put him on his donkey, took him, gave him a night in the Holiday Inn, and paid for all his lodgings. It's a nice story. But to you and me, because the phrase Good Samaritan has entered the English language, we don't understand quite what that would have meant to the people at the time. Jewish people hated Samaritans. Samaritans come from the northern part of Israel and up around where Lebanon and Syria are now. And Jewish people hated the Samaritans, and the Samaritans in turn hated the Jews. So the phrase "a good Samaritan" and seeing a Samaritan as being my neighbor would have been a frightening thing. This summer I was on holiday and with my wife and kids, and we went to Northern Ireland, and just talking to a man from Northern Ireland over here, and it's a beautiful part of the world, lovely time there. But the family that we were staying with, one of the father of the family, he does this thing when people come over to Northern Ireland. He takes them on a political tour of Belfast. I really know how to treat my wife on holiday, so we went on this. And so we went and spent an evening or a couple of hours driving around some of the roughest parts of Belfast. Anyone been to Belfast? Some of you have. And Belfast is obviously a place that over here in England has a reputation for trouble and violence and so on over the years. And I'm used to that. I've grown up with that, knowing that and seeing that on the news and hearing about things happening. But what I'd heard about was nothing compared to what I felt when I went there and went to some of these places where you've got communities, the two communities, the nationalists and the unionists, completely segregated, completely divided in parts of the city. There's something in Belfast called the Peace Wall. It's a wall about 3 meters high with another 10-meter fence on top that divides one community from another, and it's that high to stop people throwing petrol bombs over it. And we went down the Shankill Road, and some of you will remember the name, the Shankill Road, or would have heard it on the news, and it's in a part of Belfast. It's a unionist or loyalist area. And you could feel the tension in the atmosphere. Every flagpole had a Union flag or an Ulster flag on it. Murals of the Queen or of terrorists on every wall. And an incredible place. It shocked me. I hadn't realized what it was like. If you move into that road, into the Shankill Road, and you're a Catholic, probably within 2 or 3 hours, someone will come around and knock on your door if you move in. And they'll say, "Are you Catholic or a Protestant? You know, or a unionist, nationalist. Well, what are you?" And if you're the wrong thing, which on the Shankill Road it would be to be a Catholic, they'll give you 2 or 3 hours to get out. Go on your bike, out. And if you don't go, someone will come around and probably stick a petrol bomb through your letterbox. And then you'll leave. So the phrase "Good Samaritan," which doesn't mean anything to us here in London in 2005... would be like going down the Shankill Road and saying "a good Catholic," or going into Anderson Town and saying "a good Protestant." Be like going to Israel today and saying "a good Palestinian," or going to Palestine and saying "a good Israeli." It'd be like a man from the National Front or the Ku Klux Klan saying "a good black man," or a black man saying "oh, it's a good guy from the Ku Klux Klan." Be like a Bosnian Muslim saying "a good Serbian." Like an Arsenal fan saying "a good Spurs fan," or Spurs fan saying "a good Arsenal fan." Neither of those things actually exist. They don't exist at all. Only Brighton and Hove Albion fans are good. It's nice being a Brighton fan. No one's offended. It's great. It's really good. So what we see in this story that Jesus tells is the story of completely unexpected help, love, from someone who should, by rights, have hated this man. The Samaritan should have hated the Jew that was lying on the floor and being beaten up. He should have hated him. The Samaritans hated the Jews, Jews hated the Samaritans. That should have been the situation. But the Samaritan chose to get down and expend a large amount of time and money to sort this man out. Entirely unexpected love and help from someone who should, by rights, have hated them. The man who took us round these parts of Belfast in Northern Ireland is a man called Sam Pollock. He's about 60 years old. And for 30 years, he has worked in the criminal justice system in Northern Ireland. And for a number of years, was one of the governors of the Maze Prison. Some of you remember hearing about the Maze Prison. It's where they kept many of the terrorist prisoners. And he was there during the 70s and 80s when the hunger strikes were on. And the IRA said that for every hunger striker that died in the prison, they would kill 3 prison officers, and they did. He said, my boss was shot. A number of my colleagues were shot. Just driving to work, he said, my boss was just coming to his front door. They shot him through the door one morning. He was just leaving his house. He had to drive home in a different car every night. Had to take a different route home every night. The kids used to play a game. What car's Daddy Breno bring home tonight? But Sam is a Christian. And he spends much of his time working because of his job, he's the ombudsman for the police there. He's working with people who are or were terrorists, with the IRA and loyalist terrorists as well. He says, I only do it because of the Lord. I only do it because I know the love of Christ. He, by rights, should be hating people. But he doesn't. I want to show you an excerpt from a film now. It's one of my favourite films. It's the film of the book Les Miserables. Who has seen the musical? Apparently 50 million people have seen the musical Les Miserables. I haven't. I don't like musicals. They keep singing. And ruins a good story. But this is the film version. It was made back in about 1999 with Liam Neeson in the starring role. Anyone seen it, this version? Not many people. Oh, well, I recommend it. It's very, very good. So if we could turn the lights off. It's about 4 or 5 minutes long. And hopefully this should all work. What we see in that story is that Jean Valjean, who was a thief and then stole again, received astonishing and unexpected love and grace from a man who should by rights have hated him. And the bishop gave him all his silver, and his life was changed, if you know the rest of the story. I used to think I was a really nice bloke. Some years ago, I thought Mary Poppins really had nothing on me, practically perfect in every way. And I was a nice bloke. People liked me. If they didn't, it was because they didn't understand and really needed some help. I was a nice guy. I was getting on with my life, and I didn't do anybody any real harm. But then, some years back, I began to think a bit about God. I hadn't done before. I wasn't raised in a family that believed in God. I began to think about that and think about some of the things that Jesus was saying. And it slowly began to dawn on me that the basis on which I was living my life, it was all about me. The center of my world was Matt Frost. My life was driven primarily by 2 things, pride and selfishness. I was quite polite, I could cover it up well, but basically those were the motivations of my life. Me, I wanted to get the best for myself. I was selfish. I was greedy, and I was willing, when necessary, to allow that to affect and hurt other people. I treated women particularly badly. Dangerous telling this story. I'm essentially losing half my audience. But I remember, if I had girlfriends, and as long as it was going well and I was happy, that was fine. But if it wasn't, I was quite happy to discard them. It dawned on me that the way I was living life was a life that had rebelled against God and deeply hurt him, and in the process often deeply hurt other people. I'd rebelled against God and I'd hurt him and others. My life, I was living for myself. And God had and has every right to reject me. And you, for that matter. Most of us, we live our lives centered around ourselves. Not that we don't ever do any good things or help other people. We do, but the focal point of our lives is me. And the way we live and the way we treat others means that God has every right to say, forget you. I'm not interested. I mean, just look what we've done to the world. Look what we've done to each other. And what we've done to each other and to the world has also hurt God in the process. The Bible puts it like this. It says, there is nobody living right, not even one. Nobody who knows the score. Nobody alert for God. They've all taken the wrong turn. They've all wandered down blind alleys. No one's living right. I can't find a single one. God has every right to come to someone like me or you and to say, look at the way you've lived. Look at the way you've treated other people. Look at the way you've treated me. I'm not interested. Get lost. But that's the amazing thing, is that God has done the entirely unexpected thing. And he's come to people like me and people like you. And as the bishop did in the story, or the Samaritan did in the story we were looking at earlier, completely unexpectedly has given love and grace to people who should quite rightly have been rejected. The Bible again puts it like this. It says that this is how we know what love is. That while we were still sinners, or selfish if you prefer that word, Jesus Christ, he died for us. He came and gave his life for us. Let me say that again. This is how we know what love is. That while we were still sinners, Jesus Christ, he died for us. For you, for me. We didn't deserve it. We didn't expect it. We should quite rightly have been rejected. Jesus has done exactly what the Samaritan did. Jesus has done exactly what the bishop did in Les Miserables. He has come with unexpected grace, unexpected love, and given us the greatest gift he could possibly give, his own life. The bishop said to Jean Valjean, he said, with this silver I have bought your soul, and now I give you back to God. And Jesus came and said, with my life, I give you the opportunity to begin again, a new life, not centered around yourself, but centered around God and others. Love God with all your heart and love your neighbor as yourself. It's a completely different way of living. I want to finish by telling you the story of a man called John Newton. John Newton was born in 1725, so 280 years ago, whatever. He was at the age of 11, went to sea. His father was the captain of a ship, and he went to sea. He sailed on ships from this country down into the Mediterranean and back. Can you imagine an 11-year-old working on a ship, a sailing ship? Later on, he was press ganged into the Royal Navy and served in the Royal Navy on a ship there, but didn't like it, and so ran away, deserted. Eventually, the Royal Navy caught up with him. They flogged him, they demoted him, and put him back on a ship. He managed to get away from there and found work in desperation on board a slave ship that was carrying slaves from what is now Sierra Leone over to the Caribbean and North America to work in the colonies on the plantations. And for some years he worked on a slave ship carrying slaves. And many of you know the story of the slaves from West Africa and how they were packed into ships, and sometimes as many as one-fifth, 20% of them would die on the short journey from there over to the Caribbean. A terrible, degrading trade. He eventually, in fact, became the captain of a slave ship. But one night when he was captaining this ship in the midst of a terrible storm, and the storm was bad, it looked like they were going to lose the ship, he cried out to God. They survived the storm, and that day marked a transformation in his life. He went on, he left the sea, he stopped being working in the slave trade, and eventually became a Christian minister and worked in the north of England for many, many years. He's known for many things, but the most famous thing that he's known on is for writing a song called Amazing Grace. Some of you would have heard the song, some of you will know it well. Did they sing it at the Live 8 concert? Did someone sing Amazing Grace? So they did. Anyway, some of you, they did? Well, they did. Anyway, whatever. It's a very well known song. It's the most famous hymn in the English language. Amazing Grace. Amazing Grace, wrote John Newton. How sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now am found, was blind, but now I see. He described himself as a wretch. He felt he'd been the lowest of the low. Yeah, stick it out, that'd be lovely, thank you. He felt he was the lowest of the low. He'd been selling human beings into slavery, taking them from Africa and selling them into slavery. He thought he was the lowest of the low. He said, I don't deserve anything from God but to be rejected. Look at how I've lived. But God came to him and transformed his life. And he wrote this song, Amazing Grace. It was unexpected. It wasn't deserved. But God came to me and because of his love has transformed my life. Could I ask that the band would come back? When he was 82, John Newton, at the end of his life, wrote this. He said, my memory is nearly gone, but I remember two things. That I'm a great sinner, and that Christ is a great saviour. My memory is nearly gone, but I remember two things. That I'm a great sinner, I'm a wretch, and Christ, Jesus Christ, is a great saviour. Unexpected love, unexpected grace, unexpected help, unexpected kindness from someone who should quite rightly reject us or even hate us. That's the story of the Good Samaritan. It's the story of who God is and what God has done. And the band is simply going to play Amazing Grace. They're not going to sing it and we're not going to sing it either. We're going to leave the words up. They're just going to play through it for a few minutes. Just for an opportunity to think and to reflect on the amazing grace of God. Thank you for listening to me, and I'll hand over to the band.